Welcome back to the Geekcentric Podcast, and welcome to our watch club for Star Wars The Bad Batch, Season 3. There's nothing I can do. I don't have that kind of power. Don't you? Welcome back to Watch Club. My name is CT0831, but you can call me Hugs. And this is our Watch Club for Star Wars The Bad Batch, Season 3, Episodes 10 and 11. If you're joining us for the first time, this is Watch Club, our weekly review series, kind of like a book club, but way better. Keep in mind, we will be going into full spoilers for this series and Star Wars in general, so if you haven't watched this week's episode yet, be sure to do so. And then come right back in less than 12 parsecs. Now, before we get our blood tested for the 100th time, let me introduce you to our experimental crew of ragtag trooper, well, trooper. Sadly, our other batches have been abducted by the Empire, so we just have one batch joining us today, and he's taller than a Jawa, smaller than Jabba, and just as entertaining as Jar Jar. He's CT1231, also known as Edit.
Ahoy, ahoy. There, I filled in for Darcy.
I don't know if he's okay with you just adopting a hoy.
I can't take that. Let me do that again. Hello there. There you go.
There How's you go. That? There you That's go. Yeah, no one's ever said that one before.
Of course, for it's sure. A staple. For, come on.
There's in this the episode 10 that we're going to be talking about. There's a lot of. I noticed Star Wars has a thing for torturing people with needles, and like probe droids all have those needles, and I know a lot of people are quite scared of them. Before we get into these episodes, I wanted to ask you, how are you with needles? Are you squeamish? I know some people are kind of freaked out by them.
If it's a vaccine or like getting a flu shot or anything that's just like, you know, in and out, that's I'm
gotta
okay.
Do it.
I'm okay. Yeah. But where yeah. I get very squeamish is when blood is being taken. Which is why I'm a bad person and I don't donate blood, because it freaks me out. I just don't like the experience. If I have to do it because of, like, obviously health reasons, I'll do it. But, yeah. Like, just that whole process, I hate that feeling of feeling the blood coming out.
Sure.
I get woozy and stuff like that. So, I've never not been, like, again, all needles are just, they make people naturally squeamish. So, I feel like the divide for me is if it's going in versus coming out. If it's coming out, then I don't like it. I don't want to. I don't want a needle like that. So.
Well, I think it's like there's something in the brain or like in your body that's like, it's like, you know, there's certain things that it's okay with. It was getting gross, but certain things it's okay with expelling, and other things that it's, you know, there's something mm-hmm. in your mind that's like, well, blood's not supposed to really come out. But for me, I mean, I don't really get squeamish. I think the only thing I don't like is when I am, when they aren't taking blood, if they have to poke me over and over and over again, like if they don't hit the right spot on the first go, and you get all that bruising, that to me is like, you know, not comfortable at all.
No, exactly. But,
yeah. But other than that, it's not so bad. But yeah, just like these probe droids, I've just been seeing them. Not probe droids. Probe droids are like the ones that do the spying. I guess these would
no,
be
like.
No, these
are like the torture droids.
Medical,
I don't know. Yeah, the medical droids. Yeah. Medical droids would definitely
it's
have.
Those needles, though.
Those needles. Yeah, needles. Yeah. Yeah, needles make people squeamish, right? Who knows what it's injecting and all sorts of stuff,
yeah.
Right?
So yeah. Putting stuff in, taking stuff out, like we talked about. Well, listen, before our island gets totally blown up, we've got two episodes to talk about this mm-hmm. week. So let's get to it. Episode 10, Identity Crisis, directed by Saul Ruiz. We start this week in a market as we watch a mother and her son shopping and there's a disruption when the youngling tosses a vase, seemingly off screen with the Force, causing the other shoppers to whisper, calling him strange or gifted. And having overheard this, the shopkeep sees an opportunity to make some easy money and tips off a class one bounty hunter. Meanwhile, back on Tantus, Emery asks to be the new chief scientist replacing Nala Se, and Hemlock brings her up to speed on Project Necromancer and gives her access to the assets in the sub-level containment chamber as well as the vault. Inside the vault, we see three younglings playing games and having tests run on them. Hemlock explains that these particular three were selected because of their high M count, and that children, this is like so gross, but he says, children are easier to attain, more agreeable to the subjugations, and are unaware of why they're there and what they possess. He explains why Omega must be found, that her blood is the only binder that's proven to be compatible with the other younglings' DNA to recreate their M count levels. One of the younglings attempts to connect with Emery until Hemlock asks her to limit her personal interactions. And then as Hemlock leaves, one of the younglings glares menacingly at the exit. So kind of a really interesting, a lot of stuff revealed in this first section of this episode. We kind of finally have an answer, or seemingly have an answer, as to why Omega is so valuable to the Empire. What do you think of her blood being used as a binder? And do you think that's actually why they need her?
Yeah, we don't know all the ins and outs of the situation, but if Hemlock's saying that, then we at least understand that she's key to making it all work, mm-hmm. which is what we suspected. We just didn't know if in the previous episode, you know, Asajj Ventress, you know, says like she doesn't have a high M count, right? So does she not have an high M count, or is it that her blood is just a binding unit to help maintain an M count? You know what I mean? Again, mm-hmm. more questions than answers, really, at this point. So, and maybe that is what it is, right?
About Asajj lied, right? According to Crosshair, and I think that's kind of the idea. Like I do think that she does have a high M count, but I think the other thing is, like, to me, Hemlock isn't the kind of guy that just lays all his cards on the table. So when he's like talking to Emery, he's like, I'll get you up to speed or whatever. I'm like, can you get us up to speed? Like, for real? Because like I don't know. Something to me just tells me that even his, you know, chief scientist, he's not really giving all the information to. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that he's probably playing it close to his chest. He's not revealing everything. But that said, yeah, I think it's interesting to refer to her as a binder, like as the thing that kind of holds the DNA together and keeps the M count at the state of what its original clone is. So mm-hmm. I kind of understood the science to that, not like literally, but like just more or less the idea of like what her element is that she plays into this whole thing. I think that's makes sense to a certain degree, but to your point, is we might need more information to really understand how this is all going to, you know, play out.
But it was nice to see a little bit of you know, the science to it, right? To kind of actually get an understanding and get a little bit of an answer as to what's going on with Omega. I think it's excellent to see them pulling from the different species of Star Wars. I have no idea what that little hamster dude is, but like the young girl with the horns, Eva, is she's an Iktochi, which is Jedi Master's Sei-Sei Tin in the prequel trilogy. Do you remember mm-hmm. him with the horns, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think Jax is a Mirailin, which is like Unduli, Luminari.
Yeah, yeah.
Unduli, right? Mm-hmm. And I can't tell. I think the other youngling is also but we didn't really get to see too much of her. But there's so many species in this galaxy. Like, it's nice to see that it's not just like three other human kids.
For
sure.
You
know what I mean? Like, Star Wars, it's nice when we can actually get these, because I know that especially in the sequel trilogy, there were a lot of people that complained, like, where are all the aliens? Like, where are all the
force-wielding aliens? Right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's not restricted to just humans. It's sort of the same mm-hmm. thing that people were saying about, like, or I think the misconception that, you know, the Skywalkers are the only Jedis. It's like, no, they're not the mm-hmm. only Jedis, right? Like, there's far more Jedis, right, than just the Skywalkers. So, yeah, like, I think to see children, obviously, I think that's to pull, obviously, at the heartstrings of the audience and to have a sense of empathy and compassion, and also for a character like Emery to really understand what is she signing up for?
Right.
Like, what is she being a part of? I think in a lot of ways when she's asking for that chief scientist role. I think she thinks that she can probably do better with it mm-hmm. than with that knowledge and maybe help whoever.
As opposed to just whomever. Sort of being pushed to the sidelines. Like exactly. Because like this entire time.
Yeah. And I think she has a sort of desire, if you will, to want to do more. And as we can see through this episode and in these instances with her and interacting with these, you know, subjects, if you will, for testing, she starts to kind of question her role in this whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you brought up the aspect that like, yeah, they, you know, they're kids and it's crazy to see just how dark they're taking this, right? Like with the choice of kids, like we know the Empire is dark, but like to see it go, you know, I think it goes all the way back to the, you know, Master Skywalker, there are too many of them. Whatever sure. should we do? Right. And it's like, damn, yeah. like Star Wars is willing to go there. And I don't
yeah,
know.
With to have children subjects, it, you know, again, there's a lot of like validity in what he's saying.
Sure.
And why it makes the children make great subjects. It doesn't justify it, obviously. But
right.
what he's saying. Also, it's just it's nice that it's not necessarily like dark and dreary. Right. Like there's mm-hmm. this sort of open communal space. You know, they're trying to at least create some sense of comfort, even though the kids are so much old, like they're old enough to understand what's actually going on,
right.
that they know that this place isn't necessarily, quote unquote, safe as it may seem. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, again, it could have gone a lot darker. Right. And, you know, you could have seen other children that just didn't make the cut, if you will.
Right.
That would have probably. That Yikes. Probably would have had some people going, I don't know if we need to go that far. But no, I think that there's a sense of reason to why these are children, because I think inevitably when Omega gets to the point of where she is going to want to either understand what her M count is, I think these mm-hmm. kids will be the ones to help her discover that. And I think also it's going to give her a purpose and a reason to fight and save them. You know, she's always looking for someone to save. So I feel like we're kind of getting a foreshadow of where Omega might inevitably end up after episode 11.
Right. Well, and I think that like in terms of that line that he says, like they don't know why they're here and what they're capable or what they possess. Right. And I think that will be Omega's role, is to kind of show them what they possess. And I think by the end of this series, we're going to get like, well, I think we'll see some force wielding. I don't know if it's going to be from Omega, but I think at least one of these kids is going to do something pretty dope. Mm-hmm. 'Cause Star Wars, you know, we like a good broom boy moment. Why not? You know, I think everyone in Star Wars, all the Star Wars fandom loves broom boy, but but I will say I did want to kind of bring up the sub-level containment chamber and the assets that are kept within it, because he says you will now have access to. So to me, I'm like, is that just the prisoners, like the other clones, like where Crosshair was held? Or do you think it could be something more? Because I remember, and I don't know whether this was in on an episode or whether we were just talking about it, but you had brought up that there was a collection of Jedi in what seemed to look like Amber in the Obi-Wan show. So maybe they moved it to Tantiss? Like maybe they moved them there? Do you think that might be the assets?
Well, no, there's a vault, and then there's a vault with...
The kids are in the vault, and then the sub-level containment.
The yeah. sub-level containment. I feel like that's where we saw Palpatine looking at that orb. Remember that tube that opened up?
And he
was asking, like, they were telling him about the specimen, and then...
Oh, okay.
And that's where he said, like, you know, this is of the utmost importance to the Empire, so whatever so resources like the you need.
Baby Snokes or whatever?
No, well, I think those are probably other... samples, if you will,
sure.
Right, outside of these kids, because I think at the end of the day, the kids are subjects to perfecting the cloning of Jedis.
Oh, okay.
The kids are being used in a way to help perfect cloning Force users, right? I think that's right. what the kids are used for, and Omega has to fit into that equation as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why. The vault is containing those assets, but I think the sub-level that you talk about, the containment, that must be the assets that they're looking to clone. The protection of those assets, which could be Palpy's DNA or past force wielders like the ones that we saw maybe in Obi-Wan that were in Ember. They took their DNA and so on, right? Because we know that, like I was saying, that those Jedi in those like sort of amber coffins, they're sort of acting as like trophies for the Inquisitors as they, you know, go across the galaxy and get all of these different collect all these different Jedis. And you have to imagine that at the point of where this story's happening, they're sort of in the midst of it. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not like it's completely done, sort of. You know what I mean? Like I'm wondering how much Bad Batch kind of bumps up to Obi-Wan to a certain degree. We know Luke is like 10, right? When we see him in Obi-Wan. So it's like, is there an overlap, or is this like literally right before Obi-Wan? We don't know. But anyways, that said, we just know that there's the DNA of Force wielders is out and about floating, whether gone or not, right? So it's interesting to think about what's in the containment in the sub-level that they're protecting, that, you know, had the Emperor, you know, get a little bit, I'm getting a little excited seeing that. You want money? You want resources?
Here's your money.
Here's your resources. Don't worry about Tarkin. I'll take care of him.
Well, and I'm wondering too, if like, again, this is where the timeline always gets fuzzy for us as Star Wars fans. But like, to me, I'm like, could it be Rey's dad? Like, could it be a baby Rey's dad?
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Like, I don't think, like, by the time, if we were to think that Rey was born towards the end of, or actually not even the end, it's probably closer to after the battle on Endor, the dad would have had to have been sort of born shortly after, like, Empire, I guess?
Okay.
Right, because I don't I'm imagining he's like 25 to 30, right?
When we see her,
which is the beginning of the sequel trilogy, I'm imagining she's about Luke's age, anywhere between 16 to 18, right? Well, I guess maybe
when she's that little girl though on Jakku, right? She's with Onkar Plutt.
When she's tiny, though, like when she's that is a whole different, like, I think that is, I mean, when we run into her, like when we catch up with her and she's going through the ship, she's like probably, Luke's age, right? In that teenage years. But obviously she's super young. She's like probably 4 or 5 when she was left there. So it's a bit of a foggy timeline in understanding where, but I don't think, the short answer to your question is no. I don't think it's baby, it's Rey's dad. I think they haven't perfected the science yet. They haven't perfected the science yet, right?
Right.
And remember, like, I think in a lot of ways, Rey's dad was a bit of a failed attempt in a lot of ways. I don't think he had the ability to use the Force, not like his daughter would, obviously, in the future, right? So it was probably in him. But he wasn't a Force wielder like
it skips
his
a generation,
father.
Maybe,
Yeah, that tends to happen, right? So, I believe it. So, I think short answer is no. I don't think it's her dad's up in there. But I think what we're seeing is the science that would inevitably, that they're trying to perfect, that would inevitably lead to a successful clone of Palpy's DNA into... Because he apparently had multiple, right? Like, they did multiple tests.
Yeah.
From what I remember, or maybe I'm making that up. And, when we see Palpatine, I don't even, like I was saying last week, I don't think that's the success of the science from Project Necromancer.
No.
I think that's the success of dark magic, of, like, Night Sister magic. So, we're still waiting to see how this all unfolds, obviously, but... I think a lot of it's there already. Like, a lot of the groundwork has already been kind of seeded to kind of point us in that direction.
Okay, well, let's keep going here. Mm-hmm. Back on the planet from earlier, at the beginning of the episode, we see that same mother and child. They're enjoying dinner, and they hear some footsteps at the door. As the mother approaches the door, it opens, and she's immediately shot with a stun blast. And it's Cad Bane. And he requests Toto to administer a test of the baby's blood, and then like an animal, they box him up, and they leave as the youngling reaches out to his unconscious mother. The shopkeep is then paid by Cad Bane. He tosses a bunch of credits at his doorstep. So, Justin, we got Cad Bane back, and he's up to his old tricks. What did you think of his return?
You know, when they said first class bounty hunter, or class one,
yeah, like
hunter,
a class one,
like, dude. It's got to be him or Boba Fett. Like, that was the only one I could think of. But it made sense that Cad Bane would be the one. He's obviously out and about in the galaxy. We've seen him in past seasons of this show. So, you know, not a surprise. I think he was in the trailer, too. So it was like, yep, Cad Bane's coming back. But this was the perfect sort of way to just kind of throw him in there.
Yeah.
Because he still had a presence. He still made an impact. He was still dirty, if you will, just like, give me the money and let's go kind of thing. And
yeah,
it's very Cad Bane. It was great. It was great. I would have liked a little bit more from him.
I think it was a little short-lived, but I think it is funny though that like the first chronological appearance of Cad Bane was him stealing kids. And then, you know, we got him again when he took Omega that one time. And now you would think a class one bounty hunter would be targeting something that's a little bit more of a challenge. But I mean, this is easy.
Well, hey,
Yondu
didn't like doing it. You know what I mean? Like, Yondu inevitably learned and he was like, no, I'm going to keep this one with Peter Quill. So
that would be lovely. I mean, there was I think Filoni at some point said that there was a scrap storyline that Cad Bane was going to take Boba Fett under his wing at one point. And that was going to be like a mentor-mentee sort of relationship.
And then they break up the relationship, and then that's how he gets the dent in his helmet
and
all that stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of... There would have been a lot there to explore. But, yeah, it makes sense, like you pointed out, like that Cad Bane would be the one taking this kid just because he's had such a history with kidnapping children, especially force-wielding children. Because you're right, he was part of that storyline in Clone Wars where the Emperor was seeking children, right? Like force-wielding children? Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah,
okay, whoa, I didn't even think of that aspect of it. Like, they're just, it's been going on this long, maybe.
For sure. And I remembered that episode and that, I think we talked about that in the not in this season, but maybe in past, in the idea of how that would matter. And I think we're basically seeing that matter is the fact that, again, the science of this, the whole idea of pushing cloning further and the Emperor's, you know, intent of how he will, as he said in the first episode, maintain the power of the Empire, right? Like, you know, this is crucial to the everlasting power of the Empire. I think that's what he said, but more or less. And I feel like, again, that's the only way to do that is to keep a clone handy. So it's like, hey, the Emperor's gone, but you know what? We got one ready to rock.
One in the tank. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
One to rock, one to stock.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do love how much Toto was Toto 360 Cad Bane's droid.
He could
was
be
complaining.
A nanny.
Yeah, well, he says he's not a nanny droid, right?
He could be a nanny droid. He'd be a great nanny droid.
Be a great nanny droid.
I could use him.
I do think it's great that all the best droids complain. Like, whenever you think of like a great droid, they've all complained at some point, and the sass here with Toto is no different. But
you know why? You know why they complain? Because they're inferior to humans, but they're smarter than humans.
They're not inferior. They're treated like they're inferior. But yes,
well,
absolutely.
Yes, but like they're treated like they're inferior to humans.
Yeah,
and yet humans are. Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't you complain?
Yeah,
look at this human. Doing everything wrong when I'm a droid and I could be doing it better. Like, that's pretty much the attitude.
Yeah, when ChatGPT starts complaining to me, I'll know that we're in trouble. But Seth Green back in this role, I thought it was great to hear him at least one more time. Like, I don't know how many more times we're going to get to hear Toto 360 in the future. So
good to have him
back for this little bit.
It's true, but I think Seth Green has a good longstanding friendship and career with voice acting and friendship with Lucasfilm that there'd be an opportunity, right?
Let's get Toto in live action. Let's do it. When Cad Bane comes back, let's make it happen. All right, let's keep going. Back on Tantist, Eva, the little horned youngling, is being She's having her blood taken, and again she attempts to connect with Dr. Carr, and she asks about Nala Say as well as when she can go home. And then in the cell block over, SP-32 grabs Emery's data pad and attempts to use it to escape, but is shot with a stun blast as he attempts to run past some troopers. Eva asks if Jax is going to be okay, and Emery explains that he's not in trouble and that Eva can see him the next day. Then Emery meets with an imprisoned Nala Say, and she asks her about her work on Project Necromancer. Nala Say explains that the Empire will keep them, the subjects, in order to control them. And while she agrees with Emery that the kids don't belong there, she had no choice in the matter. Emery says there isn't anything she can do, and that she doesn't have that kind of power, to which Nala says, "Don't you?" And I love how slow Nala Say talks. But we can clearly see, Justin, like we were talking about earlier, like Emery is starting to turn. What do you think about the fact that the specimens in the vault are children? What is it about that that you think is maybe triggering Emery?
Because she was a child, probably, at one right. point that went through that process, right?
Yeah.
It was short-lived for her because I think she probably has the compound that makes her grow faster. But right. I think, you know, through her relationship with Omega, she saw it. Through these children, she's seeing it. They're mm-hmm. they're being used as test subjects with without any sort of permission, with any sort of certainty of like they will live after this. I think she's fearful of what will happen to them beyond these tests, and if they go further, what does that look like? How will that impact them? I think she's starting to wonder what side is she on. Mm-hmm. With this whole thing, right? Given the name of this episode is
Identity Crisis. Yeah.
Yeah, she's having an identity crisis. She's trying to understand it. And I, you know, now say sort of saying like, "Do you?" It's like implying like she has the power. She has the will. Yeah. That's what it's really about, right? Like she thinks it has to be a stature sort of thing. Well, you know, Hemlock's got this thing locked down and how am I going to do it? No, she could go outside of the lines and she could do what Nala Say did for Omega and help them escape. You know, it'll obviously look bad on her, but you know, if she really did care, right, which I think we're starting to see that she is, because you know, it's going to be interesting. Again, I know we haven't talked about the next episode, but given that our listeners have probably watched it, you know, with Omega lands back at Tantus, how's the relationship between the two of them going to be different,
right.
given this new insight for Emery?
Well, and I think it also, it's really interesting, the line, "their children like I was your plan to discard them too?"
Exactly.
And I think the really interesting thing about that is either she was on Kamino, and maybe felt discarded when she was brought over to become the Emery that we see today, you know, on Tantus. But I also, it also kind of makes me feel like she had more sisters. Like, I feel
she
like
did.
Maybe she had more sisters and they didn't, like you said, they didn't make the cut.
No.
And they were discarded. And that put the, like, that fear in her. And that's what she's seeing.
I think that's exactly what it is. I think she's starting, I think she was cold and callous in the sense that she distanced herself from those previous relationships. She didn't allow herself to process it. But now that she's interacting with children that are
And Omega, right,
she's recognizing her own, I think, grief of what she went through. Because I don't think discarded too is referring to her as being discarded. Mm-hmm. It's being referred to, as you said, to the sisters or that she had around her at you know, a very important time in her development that, you know, she no longer sees, and she probably doesn't know what's happened to them, and likely they're gone, right? So I think, again, this is unraveling. It kind of comes back again to the name Identity Crisis. It's unraveling Emery's grief in and around this whole situation by seeing new factors in this, again, equation, if you will, that they just don't have a choice, right?
Yeah.
And she's starting to realize she didn't have a choice either, but she just accepted it.
But like you said, like, she's now in the worst, like, sort of the best of the worst possible situations, right? She's put herself in that place where, you know, and especially with what Nala Say reminds her of, it's like, you have more ability now than you ever did before.
Exactly.
And so it'll be interesting to see kind of where her character grows from here. But listen, let's keep going. After being informed about the next specimen, Emery requests that she oversee the retrieval of the new youngling. And Hemlock says, do as you wish, because he's distracted by the fact that Governor Tarkin is FaceTiming in and wants to chat with him over holo message. During the meeting, Tarkin questions the funds needed for Hemlock's experiments. Hemlock explains that the project is of personal interest to the Emperor and that it's classified. Tarkin warns him that if the project fails to yield proper results, it won't bode well for his operation or himself. Hemlock, frustrated by this interaction, immediately contacts the assassin trooper and demands an update. The trooper mentions that he tracked down the Trandoshan and that she gave up a name of a pirate that's been in contact with their target. Hemlock questions the trooper's ability, saying that he already failed once, and says no more mistakes. Do not return without Omega. So, Justin, really quickly, I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but we haven't seen Sidoran scale back for this entire season, and yet she's still ruining the Bad Batch's, lives. What did you think of this betrayal, and do you think it was really, like, her choice, or was it maybe
I don't think
forced?
It was her choice. I definitely don't think it was her choice. I would imagine that there was force used, probably, in a way, to get that information from her, but... Yeah, it was a no-brainer when you heard the Trandoshan that you thought of her. And again, we don't know the circumstances of the situation, but I would assume that she probably wouldn't have given it up willingly. There was probably a little bit of it's a matter of how much, right? Was it more of a fear tactic? He scared her, and then she was like, okay, well, you know, I don't know where they are, but she will, right? And she,
right.
She says,
pass it off to this person and hope
pass
that she
it
can
off
handle
to
herself.
That person, and then maybe she can handle herself, exactly, right?
Yeah.
Because she could have probably said Pabu. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think she's probably in the know that
she'd be aware of that probably through contact with Fee, right?
Probably,
I would imagine,
right.
Yeah. But I do think it's a bit of a shame, because I mean, I love Rhea Perlman. I think it would have been great to
she's selfish, have gotten to see this. She's selfish. She's gonna save her own skin. No,
yeah.
Of course. I just mean like, of course, like I would have loved to have seen her come back, and we might see her come back. We might see her show up in sort of a redemption story towards the end, to maybe help out the Batches and, you know, give them some information, right? Like,
yeah.
When we get to it, maybe I have a theory, but we'll see.
Okay. Okay. And then the only other thing, the warning from Tarkin about the funding. Do you think we're seeing Hemlock survive this series? Like, I think he's going to get... To me, it seems like he's going to be taken out like every other Imperial that's frustrated or will frustrate Tarkin in the future, a la Krennic. Like, do you think Hemlock will actually make it through, or
well,
is this the
is
last
Tantus
we're going to
gonna make it through? Is what
oh,
I'm
sure,
wondering.
Yeah.
Right,
the entire like, is, place.
Right, the yeah. planet itself might very well make it through, but who knows? Do we see a an unoperational Death Star show up at Tantus's front door and
Yikes.
Decide to like take it out because of its incriminating information? I doubt
right.
that, but. You know, again, we've seen already with the way they took out Kamino that, you know, it exists, that there's planet killers that are already out there outside of before we even get to a Death Star.
For
so,
sure.
It's definitely something that we could see.
And
down
I mean, that's
the road.
Them. That's them hiding, you know, that stuff, too. Like it's, you know, when the Empire is done with something.
Oh, they take care of
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if like we obviously know Project Necromancer will survive. We hear about it in.
Right,
the Mandalorian.
In Mando.
So,
yeah,
and it's going to live on in some way, but who knows what's going to happen with Tantus, right? And given the cyclical nature of ending Kamino in season one, it would make sense to end Tantus in season three, and that sort of be the closure to that story for our characters.
Almost in like a reverse way, right? Where all the clones are being saved, maybe
exactly
instead of being destroyed. Yeah,
exactly. Right? Mm. That's exactly
that's
it.
That's
kind of
cool.
So, could right. be something interesting.
Well, let's round out this episode. Emery meets with Cad Bane, who asks Toto to bring the kid out, and the kid's asleep and tosses and turns and coos and caws. Emery says the specimen is younger than she expected and she needs to test him. Cad Bane is paid, and Emery asks how many others he's captured, to which he just slyly responds with, let's just say I'm good at my job, which was such a Cad Bane thing to say in that moment. Then back again, we see Eva is upset with Dr. Carr, saying she lied about Jax, saying, you know, he just wanted to go home, that they all just want to go home. And this gives Emery pause as she looks longingly at the other specimens in their cells. During testing of the new specimen's blood, Emery stares longingly at a screen of Omega. She opens a drawer, retrieves Omega's straw, Lula, and she leaves it for Eva as an apology, which was like, oh, it was so lovely. But yeah, is there anything else you wanted to mention before we go to the episode 11?
Well, no, I think that was really great. I think that was kind of the moment that shows you Emery's turn.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like she's embracing her empathetic nature. I think she's finding compassion and mm-hmm. she's reminded of Omega in this moment.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, and what Omega had to keep herself grounded was a friend,
mm-hmm.
right? It didn't need to be Emery,
right?
But it was someone. It was something. So
yeah.
I think that's sort of the touching side of the way we close out this episode. So, you know, she's come kind of full circle, I believe, mm-hmm. and I think maybe she's starting to understand herself more.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to episode 11.
Yeah.
Point of No Return, directed by Nate Villanueva. On a distant moon, Fee lands her ship in order to refuel it. While she waits, the assassin trooper sneaks aboard her ship and accesses her Navi computer and the coordinates to Pabu. Fee senses danger, but when she walks towards her ship, the trooper has already snuck into the shadows. After reporting back to a clone commando, he sends the coordinates and heads off to do some reconnaissance. Back on Pabu, the Batch is loading up the ship with supplies as they're about to leave the island. Omega explains to Liana why it's safer for everyone that they leave. Omega leaves treasures from their adventures. She leaves two things. She leaves Tech's glasses, and she leaves her own personal Lula, or I guess Wrecker's Lula. Liana asks if she'll come back, and Omega says she hopes so. Justin, what did you think of this moment? What did you think of the treasures that Omega leaves behind?
Yeah, the treasures got me. Seeing Tech's
right?
goggles.
Huh.
Understanding the importance of Lula.
Yeah.
Like, it all just... it all was a nice little moment.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy how fast we roll into this episode in the sense of, like, oh, they're out of there.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, they were, like, literally packing up. They're like, we gotta get the hell out of here. So,
yeah.
So they took Asajj's advice, and they're up and out. And it makes sense, you know, that... You know, like they're saying, like they need to let these people live in their lives and their safety. And because every moment that they're there, they're just putting them in danger, as we will see.
Yeah. Well, and I think, yeah, I mean, this was heartbreaking, heartwarming. But I think seeing Tech's glasses specifically, it makes me feel as though he is actually gone. Like, I, you know, there's a couple of elements in this episode that I will bring up later that I think kind of point to that as well. But I don't know, man. I just, something about it made me really feel like, oh no, this is, we're if we ever see him again, it'll just be these glasses. Like, I don't think he's actually coming back, but I don't know. It was just like, I think it was also a really good way for them to say goodbye to Pabu in general, right? And
for sure.
kind of show that, like, okay, this is the end of this part of their journey on Pabu.
Well, it shows, you know, leaving things that were so personal too is just a reminder of how much of a home mm-hmm. it was. I think she says that, right? It's the first place that they really saw as a home, right?
Yep.
And that has a lot to do with how the community embraced them and what it just meant to be a part of something more than just, I guess, how they saw themselves as sort of, you know, defected clones, right? Or just defected, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's something very sentimental about the importance of why those items were there, because of just how much the sort of sacrifice and they've given to get to that sort of sense of security. I think it's really pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, I thought that she was leaving Batcher at one point as well with Liana. But I was like, I don't know, like Batcher's kind of part of the Bad Batch now. Like, it's another member of the Bad Batch, so I feel like she's going to stick around. But let's keep going here. Shortly after the assassin arrives, Hunter senses danger and tells Omega it's time to leave. Then we see Wrecker loading the ship with Gonki. He turns towards the ship and hears a blinking light. And then, boom! The Marauder and all of their supplies are destroyed in an explosion that luckily Wrecker and Gonki dive out of the way and barely survive. Immediately, Hunter, Crosshair, and Omega run to Wrecker. Hunter commands that Mox and Stack take Wrecker to Sheps and that Deke gets AZ-3 to patch him up and fast. Crosshair says they've been compromised and that and then another massive boom happens, but this time it's the Empire arriving in full force in a Star Destroyer that hovers over Pabu, sending the entire island into a panic. Led by the Assassin Trooper, the troops cut off all escape routes and destroy all ships. So, Justin, we almost lost Wrecker and Gonki, but luckily we didn't. We did, however, lose the Marauder. What did you think of the destruction of the Bad Batch's ship?
Well, it's funny. We were just talking about how Pabu's become their home. And that ship was actually probably more of a physical representation of their home. So to see all that history, all of that destruction, I equate it to the way, when we saw Mando's ship blown up.
Right.
In season two. And just, holy hell, like, we were on a journey. We were on an adventure with Mando. We were on an adventure with the Batches over the last, two seasons. So to see that ship destroyed, it's pretty wild. It is pretty wild. So yeah, I'm hoping it's the Razor Crest. I can't remember.
The Razor Crest is Mando's. The Marauder is theirs.
The Razor Crest is the one that Mando's ship had destroyed. I was just trying to remember what the ship was called, but yeah, no, that was like I definitely had my mouth open for that one. I was like, oh my God. Goodness, that's almost like taking out a character. But then if they took out the Marauder and Wrecker, I'd be done.
Oh,
I wouldn't want to watch anymore.
Bro, that'd be so rough. I mean, I think it's like we talked about last week. It's like, oh my gosh, like Pabu is going to get rocked. And I mean, it does get rocked, but like, I never suspected that their mobile home would be taken away. And it's such a cool ship. I the only thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that maybe now, based off of what happened in The Mandalorian, maybe all of them are going to get their own Naboo starfighter. You know what I mean? Like, just give each of them a Naboo. Gonki can sit in the back. You know what I mean? Like, just make a square hole. Wrecker could, like, punch it.
Yeah, because they're going to need a ship. So it'll be interesting to see
what that looks
what
like
they get and what yeah. what they get, right? So
well, and I love how Gonki is truly part of the team when Wrecker tackles him out of the way of the blast. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think, like, it's funny in an episode where we see Fee, like, just arguing with her droid and, like, saying all this stuff, and we just talked about this entire time, like, droids are like second class citizens, but not to Wrecker. You know, he's got a special relationship with Gonki, I think.
No, for sure. I definitely
agree. Workout buddy.
Yeah, for sure. But it definitely is workout buddy for sure.
Yeah.
But not to say that I don't think that any of the characters from Star Wars don't have some sort of personal relationship. We've seen personal relationships all along the way between humans and droids that have been very meaningful and very touching.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think, you know, again, to see Wrecker throw himself to get Gonki out of the way, like, that's, you know, that just goes to show how much that droid really does mean to Wrecker. So
yeah, beautiful. All right, well, Omega witnesses the destruction all around her, and she laments how it's all her fault. Hunter reminds her that it's the Empire's fault, and she needs to stay focused. The Batch split up to do everything they can to protect the town, and until Omega is turned over, the Assassin Trooper tells Shep that the island will burn. During the confrontation, Wrecker starts to recover. Hunter attempts to steal a ship and fails, and Crosshair and Omega devise a plan to get her captured while planting a tracker on the ship that she's captured in. Crosshair says there's way too many variables, but Omega reminds him to focus on the bigger mission. Justin, what did you think of Omega's decision to let herself get captured again?
That was a very Crosshair decision to make. Let's just call it as it is. Like, I think the beauty of this whole situation is it feels like Crosshair came up with this plan and he was processing it and recognized that she's right. She's right. Mm-hmm. Damn, she's right. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's what's really great about this moment. Like, reluctantly, of course. Like, he doesn't want to necessarily put her in danger. He knows that there's a lot at stake here. He also has to probably deal with Hunter and Wrecker if that happens. But
right.
I think it's really, again, as we've been saying when we watch these shows and as we see Omega, she's growing up. She's becoming smarter. She's a soldier first. Meg said it best last week, right? Like, she's thinking tactically. She's thinking more intelligently about how they need to get the upper hand, because right now they don't have the upper hand. So to let them think like they've won is sort of letting them have the upper hand. But we talked about this too, because offline, I know that, like, at the end of last season, when she ends up inevitably leaving with Hemlock, it's sort of like she's giving herself up as well to save the Batches, so that the Batches are okay, right? And, you know, making sure nothing happens to them. Here, she's doing it obviously for Pabu, but she's also doing it with the hope that this time it'll be different. They'll track her, they'll get her back, and they'll follow her. Of course, as we will discover, it doesn't happen that way.
Well, I mean, even before, you know, I think even before, the stuff with Echo and you know, the whole, you know, situation there. And I think, you know, before that, she you know, as soon as they landed on that one planet, Crosshair and her, she was like, well, we have to go back, we have to go rescue everyone else. So, like, this was somewhere in the back of her mind as a plan the entire time, and I think this is maybe what sort of just, you know, this moment really brought it out. She saw an opportunity to now execute that plan, and I think it's interesting to kind of, like you said, like, there's a bit of role reversal here, right, where we have Crosshair now, you know, sort of, he's become so close with Omega that, like, giving herself up, even in the light of the big picture, he would be, you're right, he'd be immediately on board with that, but here he's so hesitant. And he, you know, he cares.
He
too
said
much.
It in the first episode, right? Like, I would leave without you. It would, right? I would not think twice. And obviously, we know that he thinks, but he knows that's the kind of person he is, right? He thinks about the actual mission that's at hand. And I love that it comes back to just that simple line of, like, you know, you have to think about the bigger picture or the bigger mission. And it's just like, this is Crosshair. Yeah.
Two times in a row, she schooled him, though. You know what I mean? We got with the Ventress episode, she schools him. And here he's like, damn, this kid's too smart for her own good.
She's been schooling him since season one, in all honesty, right?
Probably,
Because she's able to see through his you know, wall of bullshit.
Yeah. I want to shout out the Kyners again. I know it seems like I'm shouting them out every single week, but this episode we get to hear themes of John Williams, Anakin's betrayal, which I think is perfectly laced in the episode. You can hear it subtly being put in there. It's blended in such a really good way, along with, like, the traditional Bad Batch music. But, you know, when we initially heard it in Revenge of the Sith, it takes place during Order 66, right? It's like the na, 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 like that sort of really. And then here it's kind of the perfect underscore for these clones that you have to imagine are having flashbacks of Order 66, right? They're seeing troopers coming in, you know, in a filing in an order. They're seeing explosions all around them, troopers attacking people on Pabu. Like, I think it's just such an excellent touch when we can have these callbacks in the soundtrack. And I love it. Like, just shout out to them for whoever came up with that decision, whether it was the Kyners or, you know, the, you know, director Nate Villanueva, whoever came up with that. Like, just such a really cool way to sort of pull it back to put us in the mindset that, like, that you know, the Batch probably is in that moment of just the PTSD of Order 66 is just, I don't know. It was good stuff. So let's get to let's kind of round out this episode. Omega gives herself up, and they force her to hand over one of her trackers. But she's like, it's okay. Crosshair is going to get another tracker on the ship. That's what she's thinking. She didn't say that. And then Crosshair attempts to shoot a secondary tracker on the ship, but he's attacked by some additional troopers, which ends up causing him to get to it too late. He shoots, he misses, and Omega is once again captured with no way to follow her back to Tantus. So let's get to our predictions going forward here. What's going to happen, Batch? How are they going to find Omega? And who is that damned assassin trooper if it's not Tech? You know what I mean? Like I mentioned earlier that I thought maybe it couldn't be tech because, you know, I think in this episode he says like he doesn't know who Shep is, which tech would know who Shep is. Like unless there was some mind erasing situation that went on. But like we were talking offline and you'd even brought up like, well, tech would know where Pabu is. So like even on a bigger scale, everything. He would know everything. Yeah. So unless it's some sort of mind wipe thing is the only thing that keeps that theory alive for me. But again, seeing tech's glasses in that moment, I actually don't think it's tech anymore. What are you thinking?
Well, I at times it's really interesting how this assassin trooper or clone trooper, whatever you want to call him, a dark clone trooper, he sounds like Crosshair to a certain degree, but with like a voice distortion. So I don't know if that's just...
Well, even when he put the sniper up, I'm like, maybe it's just how every clone looks with a sniper, but it gives Crosshair.
I'm wondering if it's a Crosshair clone.
Yeah.
Right? Like if they took like the best parts of Crosshair without, you know, like this in terms of the accuracy and stuff like that. And that's part of the reason why he has that twitch, right? Like that twitch.
Oh,
is that
shoot.
Something has been
some sort of medical thing.
Yeah. And that's been passed on. And maybe that's what they were doing with all those clones, was taking the best parts of them and kind of melding them together to make like a sort of super clone.
Right. Shadow. Are they called the Shadow Troopers in Mandalorian? Like, could this be like a beta version 0.0001 version of those? You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. I think that could definitely be at play here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. There is an importance to him, as we've seen throughout this, and maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's as simple as the dual lightsaber Inquisitor that was on Ahsoka who just died. Everyone thought it was someone.
Anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it could literally be nothing.
It would be amazing. Sorry, really quick. It would be amazing if they did somehow slice him in half and he just turns into a bunch of black smoke. You're just like, damn it. They got us again. Dave Filoni's just laughing somewhere in the background. Brad Rao.
Yeah.
So good.
I'm going to just throw it out there as a potential option. I wonder if Sid is going to help find Tantus.
Ooh.
I wonder if she's going to feel guilty. I think Fee is going to maybe help and assist in that as well.
Mm.
I think there's maybe. I feel like that's the only way. I think she's going to say like, well, you know, he wasn't that smart. I was able to find out where he came from. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think she's going to have some intel that she can then pass on to them.
It
that would
be
a
nice
good way to
repair
the relationship and also just show like a sense of, you know, she's always really cared about it. And maybe she's more concerned for Omega. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, even if it's like the sentiments of like Hunter, make sure you get the kid back, right? Like,
right.
That would be a great way for Sid to go out,
yeah.
Right. As a character that we wouldn't see, maybe for the rest of the season, but like as a sort of fond farewell, she recognizes it and she says goodbye. I would do it that way, but that's me. I hope Jennifer and Brad. I'm sure that if you're listening to this, you probably got a far better way, but it would be cool to see Sid kind of have a redemption character, because like you said, like Rhea Perlman is lovely and is this character, and I've really enjoyed seeing her throughout. And we haven't seen her. Mm-hmm. I think we saw her on like a holograph. Like she FaceTimed in on the batches.
I don't think
was saying,
in this season. No, I don't think.
Yeah, was
season.
It at the beginning? Maybe I'm thinking. Maybe it wasn't. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe season two. But I think, you know, we'll definitely have to get Echo back at some point. Like I think Echo,
they're going to get the band back together and take down Tantus.
To me, though, I was wondering like maybe Echo is like, oh, one of our contacts came through or something. Like maybe it's as simple as that. Like they, you know, he comes in and says, well, we've got a lead or something, and that leads to another adventure, which leads to another thing. And you know, how many more episodes do we have left? Like we have
four more episodes, so four more weeks of episodes. So
okay,
they've tightened things up. So I think these last four really just need to be story that feed into the finale.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe the next one is a you know, episode 12 is an adventure story before we get into a solid three-part finale, sort of. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Could be.
But I just feel like with so much, like, with a finale in sight, you know, you can stretch things out a little bit more. So who knows? We'll see. We'll see what next week will bring for us. But I'm excited. These two episodes, definitely, they don't fit together like the other back-to-back episodes. I thought they were very like yin and yang.
Sure. Yeah.
In the sense of like one was very character focused on Emery and showing the sort of her progression and her arc, like giving her a bit more of a understanding of what she's, you know, participating in and how she's been very complacent. And I'm interested to see what's going to happen with her characters. And then also obviously the course of events that's happened in episode 11 here with Pabu being taken down to, you know, to a certain degree, and then the Batch is kind of being left, you know, with a no ship and Omega's gone. Like, it just, they didn't necessarily have the two story part thing that kind of worked for, you know, I believe it was 6 and 7 and 1 and 2, even to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Those felt very 1 and 2, like part 1 and part 2. Here it just felt like episode 10, episode 11. So yeah, I'm okay with that. It's more or less these episodes feel like they're setting up for the next 4 episodes.
Okay.
Big things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you want to maybe expound a little bit on that, let's move into our final thoughts and score for both these episodes, which we're going to be rating both of them out of a score of 5 high M count specimens. So go for it.
Yeah, like I really enjoy this episode, and I feel like my score is just a reflection of how I'm feeling about this entire season thus far.
Yeah.
Because I think each episode, obviously there's things narratively that people may or may not necessarily agree with, but at the end of the day, what I feel like when we're looking at it, it's hard to give these things a rating. I really want to look at the end of the season, and that I think will be my sort of final thing. So I'm going to give these episodes a 5 out of 5 for just being solid examples of two solid examples of sort of mixed storytelling that do set the bar and set the stakes, if you will, for what will be a great 4 episodes leading into a finale. That's my hope, obviously.
Yeah.
So I think the last 4 episodes, I'll definitely be looking at a little bit more, I'll be more attuned to, just because I know we're getting to that finale.
Yeah.
And everything really does feel like it has been set up for these final moments. But I loved seeing, you know, in episode 10, I loved seeing, you know, all the stuff with Emery, and this is just very character focused. It reminded me of the first episode in a lot of ways. And you know, you gotta love a little action, a little adventure, and also just to see your heroes lose, because that does give you more amp to see how the outcome of this is all going to play out. So I'm very excited. So yeah, again, 5 out of 5 for both of these. 5 out of 5 high M counts.
Okay. Yeah, I think for episode 10, I think we get a really cool thing that I love in any series, and we always, like, whenever they do this in any show, we get a bottleneck episode, right? And this one focused on Emery, and I think, you know, we said we really wanted it last season, and so to learn more about her, and I think this episode is great, and I think it gives us more backstory, but in a way that still progresses the story forward, which was really, really impressive. Mm-hmm. And I love that we can sort of get an episode that doesn't have any of our Bad Batch, doesn't have Omega, and yet
sure,
we still get to move, you know, we get the snowball
yes,
rolling, right? And I think it's great to start to see her crack. I think the meeting between her and Nalise was the first time where it felt like we were really seeing Emery's true colors. And I think this is just, like you're saying, it's an intriguing setup for where her character is going to end up. So yeah, I'm going to give episode 10 a very solid 4 out of 5 high M count specimens. I think for episode 11, you know, it was a wonderful, intense, action-filled episode. I think it's rare to get like sort of thriller-style twists and turns in Star Wars. And so I think this one had some really good high, like, stress intense moments. I think that moment with Hunter on the ship was crazy. Like, we don't really get to see that too often, of like being on a ship that's like, you know, kind of in the middle of going down and it's just him and he has to like jump off. And I don't know, maybe we do in Bad Batch, but I think I just the entire time after seeing Tech's glasses, I was just like, okay, so someone's going to die this episode. Like, that made me feel like, oh, that's just foreshadowing that, like, no one's safe. Look what happened to Tech. Now something. And then so as soon as Wrecker got blowed up, I was like, no, please, no. And I think the entire episode just sort of had me on the edge of my seat, which was awesome. And I think it's great that they like to scare you throughout the entire, you know, 22 minute run. And the Kiner's music, as I mentioned in the episode, was phenomenal. And just there was just, you know, that last sort of hold your breath moment of Crosshair shooting and missing, which is not something we normally see with him. This was peak Star Wars. I really enjoyed it. I'm giving this episode 11, a solid 4.5 out of 5 high M count specimens. But that is it for this week's Watch Club. We hope you enjoyed it. For Star Wars The Bad Batch Season 3, we hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, make sure to subscribe to us wherever you like to listen to podcasts, if you haven't already. And if you want to write into the show with your thoughts or your predictions on the shows we cover in Watch Club, well, listen, you don't have to get abducted by the Empire again. Instead, Justin, can you let the big, beautiful batches know where they can reach us by holo message?
Well, they can reach us at wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. That's wearegeekcentric@gmail.com. Or they can reach out to us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at GeekcentricYT, or on Instagram at wearegeekcentric.
We've also opened up a channel in our Discord, so you can join using the link in our description. Come over, tell us your thoughts and theories, and, you know, we might be able to just talk about them on the Watch Club itself. We've got, you know, 4 more episodes of Watch Club, I guess, coming up to round out this season, this final season. But we've got a ton of other great episodes covering the latest in movies and TV shows, including our recent spoiler-filled discussion on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, our spoiler-free reviews for Three Body Problem, X-Men 97, Invincible Season 2 Part 2, Kung Fu Panda 4, Extraordinary Season 2, and Dune Part 2. A lot of numbers throughout those. Plus, we have a special This Week in Geek episode that we posted that just talks about some of the latest and greatest trailers and, you know, all the things that we are just hyped for, you know, and what's to come throughout the year that we'll be sure to be covering. We also have some great interviews out now, like our most recent interviews with the cast of Renegade Nell. I sat down with them to discuss what makes this series so special, and they give me some excellent 18th century style tips that might involve a decorative corset. So go check out those interviews both here on your podcast service of choice or over on YouTube at youtube.com/geekcentric. We've got some great reels and things like that that you can check out on our Instagram and, of course, on our TikTok. So, you know, subscribe to all the things. Leave a review. It helps us so much. We'll have more Watch Club coming soon. Justin, thank you so much for joining me for this Watch Club. And as we say,
good soldiers follow orders.